Let there be no doubt, Islam is a part of America. And I believe that America holds within her the truth that regardless of race, religion, or station in life, all of us share common aspirations. To live in peace and security. To get an education and to work with dignity. To love our families, our communities, and our God. These things we share. This is the hope of all humanity. Of course, recognizing our common humanity is only the beginning of our task. Words alone cannot meet the needs of our people. These needs will be met only if we act boldly in the years ahead. And if we understand that the challenges we face are shared, and our failure to meet them will hurt us all.
Hello, I'm Mark Steiner, and welcome this hour to the Mark Steiner Show. Earlier today, as you heard, President Obama gave a historic address to the Muslim world from Cairo. We'll be discussing that speech and asking what is the future of the United States relations with the Muslim world, and examining the response from countries like Iran, Palestine, Egypt, and Israel. Rami Khoury joins us. He's editor-at-large for the Daily Star in Beirut, Lebanon. He's director of the Issam Ferris Institute for Public Policy and International Affairs at the American University in Beirut. Rami, welcome. Good to have you. Good to talk to you again.
Good to be with you.
I know you've been a busy man today doing commentaries. You wrote an article on June 2nd talking to President Barack Obama and saying that we don't need a speech full of platitudes and how much you love the Muslim people. We need to hear some very concrete things. And you talked about the Arab-Israeli conflict, the resistance front, talking to them, and the lack of democratic rule of law, past governance systems in most Arab nations. So let's talk one by one how he addressed those issues for you and whether this was success. When you heard him talk about the Arab-Israeli conflict, did it meet expectations?
I think it was positive. It was putting the Israelis and the Palestinians almost at the same level of legitimacy and needs in terms of statehood and security. There was, I think, some reasonably good rhetoric about both sides having to enjoy the rights of statehood and security, and both sides having to make concessions, and the U.S. was going to play a strong role. So there were some positive sounds and tones and specifics, but it was still a bit it was a bit unsatisfying because he didn't really come right out and say that the Palestinians and the Israelis have equal rights. They seem to be being treated by the U.S. Still with a bit of historical hangover that the Israelis seem to have a little bit more priority rights than the Palestinians.
So just from your perspective and the perspective of the people who are listening to him, how should he have been more emphatic about that?
I think he should just come right out and say that the Israelis and the Palestinians, in the eyes of the law and in the eyes of God and in the eyes of the United States, are absolutely identical in terms of the rights that they have, and that the crimes that both sides commit, whether it's terrorism or strangulation or starvation and attack by the Israelis or terrorism by Palestinians, that both of them are wrong. He didn't equate the two as equally bad. If you go through the speech, it was clearly focused more on telling the Palestinians they've got to stop violence and behave, and telling the Israelis that they've got to stop settlements, but who were not fully equated as being of equal magnitude. So there are still some nuances there, but this is not a policy program. He's just laying out certain American principles, and he did make some statements that I think were a little bit better than what American presidents have said before, that both sides need to have statehood and security. So that there's some positive elements there. So I think I'd give him a sort of a B-. It's not bad, but there are areas where he could do better. But it's certainly better than what came before him in terms of the Bush administration.
Many people would not question that statement. Now, what about what the importance that you place on having dialogue with the resistance front, as you wrote, Syria, Iran, Hezbollah, and Hamas? I didn't hear much in the speech about that other than Iran.
Right. There's a basic contradiction, schizophrenia in American policy now, which is, on the one hand, I think Obama has done very well and very sensibly in terms of re-engaging with Iran and Syria and talking to them and negotiating with them, making it clear that the U.S. wants to deal with them diplomatically and have normal relations. That's really excellent, and I applaud him for that. On the other hand, he's doing, he's trying to do this while he's also boycotting Hamas and Hezbollah, and there's a massive contradiction there that you can't really do that and be taken seriously, or your policies are going to hit a brick wall pretty soon. So he's still got some confusion there that he's got to sort out, I think, in terms of if he's going to deal with these countries and these resistance groups, as they like to define themselves, he needs to have a single policy that relates to all of them.
I wonder, when you think about this, how you view what it would mean for America to sit down with Hezbollah and Hamas, and how they would do that.
Well, they would do it the same way they sat down with the IRA in Northern Ireland, and the same way they kind of put the Taliban in Afghanistan, and the way they talked to the Viet Cong in Paris when the Viet Cong were killing Americans and Americans were killing Viet Cong. You engage somebody according to a diplomatic process that says, we are going to negotiate and resolve our conflicts peacefully, and we are going to do it through peaceful negotiations, and it's very easily done. The U.S. has done it many times. There's no reason why I can't do it with the Palestinians and the Lebanese. The problem with the U.S. is every time its policies rub up against Israel, it loses its anchorage and goes off and does unique policies that it doesn't apply elsewhere. It contradicts its own policies. And this is a problem that the U.S. and Israel have to sort out. If America's Middle East policy is being dictated by Israel or dictated by U.S. national interests, I think Obama is starting to say that the U.S. is going to have a Middle East policy that is in the national interest of the United States. It also is committed to Israel's security, but also committed to the rights of the Palestinians. So there is some new thinking and new rhetoric coming out of Washington, and I think we need to acknowledge it and encourage it.
Now, what about the other principle that you talked right about and wrote about in your article, that he has to speak to the lack of democratic rule of law-based governance systems in most Arab countries?
Well, this is a big problem in most of the Arab world and all the Arab world. It's not really Obama's problem. It is only in the sense that American support allows many of the autocrats and dictators to stay in power. And that's a problem that the U.S. has to deal with somehow. But it deals with this all over the world. And we know that national interests are always going to trump democratic rights. Big powers do that, and this is a fact of life. I think he laid out important principles that the U.S. will support in terms of good governance, democracy, women's rights, equality, etc. And that's about as far as we can expect him to go right now, to lay out policies that the U.S. will support, and we hope that he will actually make that an active commitment and put it into practice.
Well, and reflecting what you were just saying, Rami, before you go, is there was the polls that show that 70% of people in the Muslim world do not really trust the American government, though 70% either feel neutral or positive about Obama. When you put those together and hearing kind of your analysis of the speech, what do you think the outcome was today? How do you think that played in those two factors?
Well, I think Arab attitudes to the U.S., or anybody's attitudes around the world, but Arab attitudes especially to the U.S. are driven by American policies. People love American values, and they want to go to American universities and do business with the U.S. and buy American products. They have no real problems with most American values and practices, but they have a big problem with American foreign policy. So most Arabs criticize the U.S. foreign policy. If the U.S. policy changes and becomes more reasonable and more law-abiding and consistent, then a lot of the Arab criticisms of the U.S. will disappear. And I think this is something that you're seeing signs of, because Obama is articulating, at least at the rhetorical level, new policies and new principles, new directions and new vibes, new themes, a new style. So people are reacting quite positively to him. And I think this speech is going to basically make people say, we like what we're hearing, but let's get it beyond the rhetoric and let's see it implemented in policy terms. And this is, I think, the predominant reaction around the region.
And is that your sense as well? I mean, I've read your stuff, many things you've written over the years, and talked to you a few times over the last few years, and I wonder if that also is your analysis of where this is going and how you think it might proceed from here.
Well, it is basically my analysis. I'm impressed by most of what he said today. I think he does have some problem still that he's got to work out. He's got to drop this stuff about dealing with Islam and the Islamic world as a whole. He's got to deal with the fact of countries where the Muslim, where the majority of citizens are Muslim religion, of the Muslim Islamic religion, and who are Muslims, and therefore deal with the rights of people and not deal with this vague thing called Islam, which is a religion. And you don't have a policy towards a religion. You have policies towards countries. So he's got to sort out, he's still reacting to 9/11, as many Americans are, and understandably so. It was a traumatic crime. But foreign policy should not be dictated by confusion and anger about events in the past. He needs to also, I think, not, you know, his list of seven challenges. The first one in a speech to the Islamic world was about violent extremism, and that's not a, a very nice way to start dealing with people if you want them to take you seriously. He should talk more about rights, about justice, and things like that. So there are still some contradictions he's got to sort out. He only mentioned Iran essentially in the context of nuclear power and nuclear bombs and stuff like that. So there are weak points still in the speech that have to be addressed and that reflect weaknesses and confusions and some contradictions in American foreign policies. But it was, on the whole, a positive speech. I would, despite my criticisms of some elements, on the whole, it was positive. It reflects a change in tone and style, maybe in some direction of policies. But there hasn't been a significant policy shift yet. And he was laying out some principles. He wasn't laying out a policy roadmap or anything like that. He was laying out basic principles. And these are principles that we've always expected the U.S. to uphold: justice, equality, democracy, you know, no occupation, no dictatorships, etc. And this is why people like the U.S., because they think it represents these kinds of noble principles. And he just articulated them in a more clear way, along with some you know, Bible and Quran lessons, which were kind of cute, but really pretty meaningless.
So we have to move from principle from principle to policy, and America has a short window in your perspective to get that done.
Yeah, I think that it's got to move pretty quickly if it wants people to keep applauding it. And he's Obama's got a lot of people supporting him and respecting him, and this is a real chance for him to move. And we've got to move with him. People in the Arab world need to react, and so does everybody else, the Israelis, the Iranians, the Turks, the Europeans. But he's really taking a strong lead, and I think it's a positive thing.
Rami Khoury, I know you only had a few minutes to talk with us, and I do appreciate you taking the time. And it's always a pleasure to read your words and to hear your voice in the air. And thank you so much for taking the time with us today.
Okay, thanks for having me. I appreciate it. Talk bye-bye.
Bye-bye, Rami. That was a conversation we had earlier today with Rami Khoury, editor-at-large for the Daily Star in Beirut, Lebanon. But don't go away, because we will be right back for more conversation about President Obama's speech from Cairo. We'll be joined by Dr. Fawaz Jerjes, who is a leading expert in the Middle East and a professor at Sarah Lawrence College, and Ali Zagheb, a Palestinian who is an activist in Palestine and Israel, who now lives here in the United States of America. The Mark Steiner Show is brought to you by MeQ, Baltimore's credit union. Offering a full range of financial services, MeQ was formed in 1936 to help people during the Great Depression. And over 70 years later, they're still here to help people during difficult times. More information is available at mecu.com.
Support for WEAA is provided by...
Welcome back. I'm Mark Steiner. The Mark Steiner Show is made possible by the Mortgage Late, Don't Wait, Maryland State Mortgage Late, Don't Wait program. For more information and personal counseling, the number is 1-877-462-7555. We're talking about President Barack Obama's speech in Cairo. You heard the interview we just had with Rami Khoury, who is editor-at-large for the Daily Star in Beirut, Lebanon. He joins us from his home in Beirut earlier today. We pre-recorded that for you. And now we are joined live in the studio by Dr. Ali Zagheb, who is a local businessman but is a Palestinian by birth, former professor of English literature at Bir Zeit University in Palestine, or known as the West Bank to some. When he was a young man on the West Bank, he was a leader of a nonviolent youth movement at the university, and in the middle of the night was visited by the Israeli troops, blindfolded, led to the Allenby Bridge, sent across the bridge, and out of Israel. But since has been back and forth to Israel and also has a home and business interest on the West Bank. And he joins us in the studio. Ali, it's always a pleasure to see you. Welcome back.
I thank you, Mark. Pleasure to be here. And I like the idea when I was a young man.
We all like the idea when we were a young man.
I am still a young man, and I still believe that the youth groups who are working to establish peace between Israel and Palestine are the groups that will lead us in the future.
I hope you're right. In a moment, we'll be joined with Dr. Fawaz Gerges, who is the Christian A. Johnson Chair of Middle Eastern Studies and International Affairs at Sarah Lawrence College and author of Journey of the Jihadist, Inside Muslim Militancy and the Far Enemy, Why Jihad Went Global. He's finishing up something. He'll be joining us here in a few minutes. And you can join us here at 410-319-8888. What did you think of President Barack Obama's speech to the world, to the Muslim world earlier today? It has been all over the press, obviously. We want to hear your thoughts on what that speech meant. And some people have likened it to his speech on race when he was running for president of the United States and the profoundness of that speech. And Ali, give me your perceptions of that. I mean, let me pull this mic a little closer down to your mouth.
Like almost everything else in life, perception sometimes is more important than reality. And the perception here is this is a great speech. By far, it is the best speech that any U.S. president could have made addressing the problems between, and there are problems between the Islamic world and the United States of America. I know Mr. Khoury just indicated there is basically Mr. Obama or President Obama should concentrate on states and governments versus Islamic nations. That is true to some extent, but there is also the perception in the Arab-Islamic world that the U.S. is an enemy to the Islamic Arab countries, and the wars that the former administration started against Iraq and Afghanistan. While most of the Arab Islamic people initially supported the war against Afghanistan, very, very few of them supported the war against Iraq. Here comes a new administration with a new president who is extremely eloquent and sensible, and he goes to Cairo, the cradle of the Islamic civilization, and gives a speech basically trying to tell the Islamic people, we have no fight with you. And if you listen to the speech, he did not use the word terrorist a single time. He called them extremists. And I think that is also a great approach to the problem, because there are extremists from all religions, and once you start calling them Islamic terrorists and Islamic this and Islamic that, again you are going to alienate more than a billion people in this world. But the extremists, they do exist in the Arab world, in the Islamic world, and in the Christian world, here, there, and everywhere. And I think this is a great approach. I do believe, all in all, it was an extremely positive speech, and the repercussions are felt. I talked to a couple of people overseas today, and everybody was very positive about the speech.
We're now also joined by Dr. Fawaz Gerges, and Dr. Gerges is the Christian A. Johnson Chair of Middle Eastern Studies and International Affairs at Sarah Lawrence College. He's been a guest on the show many times in the past. He's author of the books Journey of the Jihadist, Inside Muslim Militancy, and The Far Enemy, Why Jihad Went Global. And Fawaz Gerges, welcome. It's good to have you on the air again with us.
It's my pleasure, always.
So we were just talking generally. Ali Zaghib is our other guest today, and he is a former professor of English literature at Birzeit University and was unsummarily kicked out of Palestine as a very young man when he was leading a nonviolent movement of Palestinian students. He's now a businessman here who goes back and forth between here and Palestine, where he has business interests. So, Fawaz, what was your, give us an overall, your general read as Ali was giving us, and then we'll talk about some specifics.
Well, I think it was a very powerful speech. I mean, I think you had power speaking with humility. Power, here you have the most powerful man, but speaking humility to Arab and Muslim audiences. I think the most powerful message is that what Barack Obama is trying to do is to reframe the debate between the United States and the world of Islam, to offer a new narrative, beginning to basically change the focus from the so-called war on terror. He didn't only say that the United States is not at war with Islam and Muslims. went beyond that. He said, well, look, we would like to be partners with the Arab and Muslim world. In this particular sense, he also interweaved his own personal story with the in trying to redefine the debate by saying, well, look, I am the son of an immigrant from Africa with many members, Muslim family members. I lived in Indonesia, the largest Muslim country in the world. I used to hear the call of the azan or muazzin on a daily basis. Islam is part of the social fabric of America. There are 7 million Muslims. This is dynamite. This is dynamite because this particular discourse resonates with the Arab and Muslim world, and it resonates big time.
Let me open the phones early here. I want people to be able to join this conversation with our two distinguished guests, Dr. Fawaz Gerges and Dr. Ali Zaghib. 410-319-8888. As we look at President Obama's speech in Cairo and what he had to say, it's not just the Muslim world, but the world. And Jonathan in Maryland, you're on the air.
Yes, hi. Thank you for taking my call. I appreciate it. I'm listening to what you're saying, and, you know, he struck a lot of chords with the Muslim world, and I think it was the perfect speech at the perfect time, because the issue is, the way I see it, is that, you know, when the Bush administration left, the world didn't know where Islam stood in America. They just kind of were left kind of hanging. And so I think he did a good job of centering the topics down to, you know, their lowest common denominator, which is, you know, peace in the Middle East, you know, allowing people to understand that, you know, we're not trying to be rulers of the world. You know, he made a point in the speech where he said that, you know, our country, America, was founded through a revolution of an empire. So, you know, our history is based on that. The one thing that I want to say, and I, you know, I'll hang up after I say this, is that the bottom line is that despite the speech, this is the first time that a president has done this type of thing that I can remember. Now, as you probably can tell, I'm a younger person, but I try to pay attention to these types of issues. But usually presidents of the United States don't do these types of things. And number two, they get more hype from things like the State of the Union. There is more hype over that than over speeches like this. And I really want people to understand the, you know, despite what he said, you have to look at this the moment. I mean, that was what really, you know, kind of triggered me. And also that this man is highly popular throughout the globe. And, you know, people were standing up and saying, I love you in Arabic and in English, you know, in the audience. And that shows just how powerful of a person he actually is. And, you know, I just wanted to say that. Well, and I'll hang up and I'll listen. But, you know, thank you for taking my comment.
Jonathan, thanks for calling. We'll come back to the phones in a minute at 410-319-8888. Let's talk a bit about that. I mean, one of the things that Rami Khoury said on the show here at the beginning, who we talked to earlier in Beirut today, was that it was a wonderful personal speech, but the real issue here is going to be translating personal into policy, that it was well-received, he thinks, by most people in the Arab world and in the Muslim world, but that it has to go very quickly and in short order from that to some very concrete ideas, and rhetoric will only last so long. And let me start with Fawaz and go to Ali and see what you think about
that. You know, I really think we're missing the big picture if we confuse discourse as policy. Barack Obama is not naive to know that basically there is a magical bullet by which he resolves the differences, the policy differences. He made it very clear. What to understand is that this is really what Barack Obama is trying to do, is to establish a new paradigm for a new relationship, the beginning of a new relationship based on clear understanding. And in this particular sense, I think this is the beginning of a very complex process. But I think in this particular sense, Mark, let's remember that symbolism matters. And matters a great deal, not just in domestic politics, but also in international politics. And the reason why the president did not preach to Arabs and Muslims today, The president talked about engagement. The president talked about the fact that we would like to listen to your grievances, and you would like us to also, you should listen to some of our concerns. In this particular sense, I think he focused more on the common humanity that basically we have in common instead of the differences that divide us. It's the beginning. It's a new paradigm. He is trying to reframe the debate. In this particular way, he is trying to disarm Al-Qaeda, to deny Al-Qaeda ideological ammunition in the world of Islam. He not only said that we are not at war with Islam, he's saying, in fact, we would like to take the relationship to a new level, partnership in humanity, common ground, new approach between the world of Islam and America.
Ali, how do you read that?
You know, I totally agree with Fuad here. Fawaz, I'm sorry. If you look at the reception and the people, the applause, how many times he was interrupted by applause, men and women screaming, "We love you," in Arabic and English. Look at that picture vis-a-vis the picture of the last president in his last trip to the Middle East with shoes being thrown at him. I do believe, and I did not support the gentleman who threw the shoes at President Bush. I think there is still a lot of respect for the President of the United States, and we all should stand behind the President of the United States, no matter how unfortunately wrong he was in that regard. But look at the perception, look at the reception that the people opened their hearts and minds, and they lined up in the streets of Cairo trying to wait to listen to President Obama. This is a new beginning.
Well, it's not just, you know, really, as you said. I mean, what we need to remember is that, and I'm sorry to generalize, but Arab and Muslim culture, it's a culture that deeply cares about words, about language, about symbolism, about the idea of establishing a common ground between civilizations. I think he hit the right tone today. I think what he's trying to do is to establish a bridge whereby the Western culture and the Islamic culture could really reach the safe harbor of peace and stability. He knows, and we know, that this is just the beginning. We know that there are multiple challenges. We know that the president, and he made it very clear, he said, "I will personally be actively engaged in the peace process." He made it very clear that we have policy differences. What he's trying to do really is to normalize relations, to take us back to the pre-9/11, and in fact, to try to overcome the differences that brought us to this particular tragic juncture in history.
Let me reopen the phones here as we talk to Dr. Fawaz Erjes and Dr. Ali Zaghib. 410-319-8888. Your thoughts on Barack Obama's speech. We come back, we're going to hear a piece of that speech where Barack Obama talked about Israel and the Palestinians, and get our guests' reactions and yours. And Joseph from Woodstock, you're on the air.
Hi, Mark. Hi, Joseph. Just wanted to say this is my first time calling you since you've moved, and I'm very happy and proud that Morgan State has accommodated you. I just want to ask your guests, and I'm not sure if they could, if they have any expertise in this area, but how can Barack Obama translate this international goodwill and rapprochement and skill at diplomacy into political capital at home? Because we do have the experience of Jimmy Carter succeeding on an unprecedented scale in Middle Eastern affairs, but being dismissed from office shortly after that and not having reaped so much domestic goodwill from all the energies and efforts that he put into work abroad. So I was wondering if they could address that question, what ideas they have, because I think the Middle East shares culpability with the outcome that's going on, as well as the United States. It's a mutual arrangement or outcome, I should say.
Just a good question. Ali, you want to start?
I really do believe, with all due respect to President Carter, and I admire the gentleman. I admire him immensely, in fact. And I think he's a much better person after being president. I think President Obama is he knows Washington and the ways of Washington much more so than President Carter ever did. And the group that President Carter, if you remember, that he brought with him, Jody Powell, Hamilton, and others, they, most of them really came from Georgia, and they did not understand Washington. I do believe President Obama understands Washington much better, and I think he will succeed further than the first 4 years. And let me go back a little bit to the Israeli-Palestinian, or you're going to have...
We're going to play a clip. Okay, we'll come right back to that.
I'm just going to stop there in that case.
May I add one note on this important question?
Please, for us, yes.
You know, Mark, this is really... I mean, the caller put his finger on it, the cracks of the map. And we come back to the American domestic context. I mean, we have said a great deal about educating Muslims about America. Absolutely. President Barack Obama is absolutely correct. Muslims, I mean, must really realize that there is more to America than foreign policy. But the question is, we also have a major task here, educating Americans and America about the world of Islam. And in this particular sense, already Barack Obama is being taken to task. As you well know, the attack on Barack Obama has started in the last few days. He has been described as an apologist. He is basically not respecting the leadership of America. Today I was on CNN, and one of the leading members of the Reagan administration said to me, well, look, he comes across as weak. He does not really use the whip. And also the question, I mean, he is now basically navigating in a minefield, Mark. Now he is stepping on very sensitive issues. I mean, once Barack Obama, I mean, as you well know, he used the term Palestine more than once today. He talked about the suffering of the Palestinians, their dislocation, their humiliation, the occupation. And then he called on Israel to recognize the humanity of the Palestinians. And also he called on the Palestinians to recognize the tragedy, the great, I mean, Holocaust, the 6 million people killed, to recognize the idea behind Israel. I think you're already having here, you're going to have a major, major, basically, onslaught. A series of attacks on Barack Obama, because how do you create a peace constituency in the United States? How do you create the supporting landscape that enables President Barack Obama to translate his rhetoric into concrete policies? Mark, at the end of the day, rhetoric is wonderful, but what we need to understand, the president has limited political capital. Every president, not just Barack Obama, regardless of how much he knows Washington, the idea, at the end of the day, will he be able to use his precious political capital in trying to nudge the leading parties, the Palestinians and the Arabs on one hand, and the Israelis, and to convince the pro-Israeli community in the United States that peace not only serves the interests of the Palestinians, peace is a security strategic interest of the United States, and peace serves the interest, the long-term interest of Israel and the Jewish community. Well, this is the challenge, and the challenge we're just beginning today.
We're going to play that clip here for everybody. I just want to also introduce, this is Dr. Fawaz Jurgis, you just heard, the Kristen A. Johnson Chair of Middle Eastern Studies and International Affairs at Sarah Lawrence, Dr. Ali Zagheb in the studio, a businessman and former professor of English literature at Birzeit University in Ramallah. And we are now joined by William Kern. William Kern is the editor and founder of WorldMeets.com. US, which is a website who we partner with a great deal, connecting Americans with the world. He translates articles from around the globe that affect the world in the United States, and has translated many articles already on his website today from throughout the Middle East, Africa, and Israel, commenting on today's speech. And William, welcome. Good to have you with us.
Good to be with you, Mark. Sorry about my tardy arrival.
No, and I'm sorry that I asked you to come here at the last minute, but I appreciate you calling and being here.
Happy to be on the show. Happy to be with you and your listeners, as always.
Let me take a moment here. This is like about a minute. I want to play a piece of Barack Obama's speech this morning that he talked about Israel and the Palestinians that Fawaz Jurgis was talking about. And let's listen to his words and then let's comment together. And I'm curious to see in this commentary what William will tell us about what happened in the world in the Arab press today. But let's hear this.
At the same time, Israelis must acknowledge that just as Israel's right to exist cannot be denied, neither can Palestine's. The United States does not accept the legitimacy of continued Israeli settlements. This construction violates previous agreements and undermines efforts to achieve peace. It is time for these settlements to stop. And Israel must also live up to its obligation to ensure that Palestinians can live and work and develop their society. Just as it devastates Palestinian families, the continuing humanitarian crisis in Gaza does not serve Israel's security. Neither does the continuing lack of opportunity in the West Bank. Progress in the daily lives of the Palestinian people must be a critical part of a road to peace, and Israel must take concrete steps to enable such progress.
That was a part of President Barack Obama's speech today in Cairo. And as I said, we are joined by William Kern, Dr. Aliza Geb, Dr. Fawaz Jurjis. So let's, in some ways, what he said earlier in the day, Rami Kouri said to me, it wasn't enough. He didn't make the Israelis and Palestinians equal in policy, he thought, from the speech. Well, but he thought it was a step forward. But let me go around the room and ask first you, Ali, as a Palestinian, an observer of, and you're in back and forth between Israel, Palestine, and America a great deal, then hear Fawaz's thoughts, and I also want to hear then from William Kern about what the Arab press is saying about this. But Ali, why don't you start?
I think what President Obama said today, it was extremely immense, you know, very, very strong words about Palestine, the suffering of the Palestinian people, the lack of opportunity, this and that. I have never heard anybody in the United States, neither a senator, nor a president, nor a congressperson, say these things loud and clear in public and in private. These are immense words. They carry a lot of meaning. And I was extremely happy to hear them myself. And I talked to a couple of people in the West Bank today, and they were ecstatic. It's unbelievable that the President of the United States says, we need to stop settlements. The previous administration, as far as they went, unhelpful to the expanding of settlements. Now we have to stop them. The word Palestine, he didn't say Palestinian Authority. The word Palestine was mentioned more than once in equal terms with Israel. And everybody who heard the speech, it is just beautiful oratory and hit the point as he should have.
Now, Fawaz, you spoke to this a moment ago, but would you like to add something to that?
You know, I don't know if you know, Mark, but Hamas came out with a statement today after the speech.
Yes, I read it.
And Hamas said that it does recognize, basically, that the discourse of President Barack Obama represents a change for better. This is, it tells you a great deal. Even though the president made it very clear that Hamas must accept the rules of the international game and accept the previous agreements. He was very clear about that. Even Hamas does recognize that Barack Obama represents a change. What's really fascinating, Mark, to me as a student of Arab and Muslim politics and American foreign policy, he talked to both the Palestinians and the Israelis as mature, basically, Asians. He did not preach. He did not lecture. He told them, the reality is, you face a common reality, common humanity. Israel has security concerns, absolutely. And the Palestinians are also, Palestine is a reality. He talked to both sides. The challenge, of course, people say he did not have a plan. Give me a break. This is a speech, a statement of intention. This is a speech about symbolism. The big challenge comes later on. He is establishing the ground, the bridge from where to start from now on.
William Kern, talk a bit about how this was received in the Arab press today and what you've read from the articles you've translated.
Well, I would absolutely agree with your previous guest about how he was speaking to people like adults, which is one reason why people in the United States, I think, took a liking to him when he ran for office. Now, we're still in the early moment, very early in a reaction from the Arab press, because right now it's a little past midnight in the Middle East, in most of the Middle East, and so the next newspaper day will be printed in a couple of hours. So we're going to start covering that. But we do have some initial reaction. I happen to have watched the speech on Al Jazeera, and the Hamas director from Syria, I think he was in Syria, was absolutely dumbfounded by Barack Obama's speech. And you could see that the man was moved. Now, we have a reaction from the Israelis, which is in the middle column of worldnews.us, and it's Barack Obama reshuffles America's Middle East allies. And from an Israeli perspective, they see a man who wants to have a free hand and to be able to, as they put it, reshuffle America's Middle East allies. I'm sure the Israelis are very disconcerted by the speech and not really sure what to do about it. We had a couple of articles from the Israelis up there about their initial reactions. One of the headlines is that the Israeli cabinet is split over the speech. By the way, if you want to watch the entire speech, we have posted that as well. What we have are a couple of translations up there now from right before the speech from the Egyptian press. And there's an article up there, Obama the Prince and His Muslim Cinderella, which is fascinating to me because it has kind of takes cultural elements from the Arab world, from the West. It uses Cinderella, it uses Alibaba and the 40 Thieves to kind of to demonstrate to people that Obama is no prince, and people in the Arab world have to start doing some of the heavy lifting themselves. So I am very, very curious to see what's going to be in the Egyptian newspapers tomorrow. The British reacted, we have British reaction up there, which was very, very positive, the point-by-point analysis from the BBC, going over every single thing that he said with a fine-tooth comb, which I'm sure is exactly what people in the Arab world... It wasn't the soporific speech people had thought. He obviously touched on every critical and every critical issue that people are wondering about. And he did it boldly, and he did it in a way that, as your previous guest said, treated people like adults. And I'm busting waiting for the next few hours to unfold more.
I'm looking forward to seeing what comes up on your website as well. Let me ask this question. One of the things, again, playing a little bit off of what Rami Khoury said to me this morning when I interviewed him this afternoon, and he said, one of the things he said was that within critical areas is that if President Barack Obama and the Americans government does not speak directly to what he calls a resistant group, Hezbollah, Hamas, Syria, and Iran, but especially let's talk about Hamas for a moment, does not sit down and speak with Hamas, then all is for naught, that you can't ignore Hamas, that have to be set down table. And I asked him, then how would you do this? He said the same way you and America did with the National Liberation Front of South Vietnam. You sat at a funny-shaped table, but you had a conversation.
Mm-hmm.
And that conversation has to take place. And so, again, let me go to Fawaz and Ali and get you to start. We'll bring William right back in. Your thoughts on what this American policy, a little conjecture on your part, but what you think might happen here. Fawaz?
Well, I mean, I think the reality, the Obama administration is basically in the process of having a comprehensive review of American foreign policy, Iran, towards Syria, the Palestinian-Israeli conflict, and so on and so forth. I think by trying to engage Syria and by trying to engage Iran, Mark, the administration is already indirectly engaging both Hezbollah and Hamas. Let's be blunt about it. I think once you fully engage the Iranian leadership and the Syrian leadership, you are indirectly talking to both Hezbollah and Hamas, since Syria and Iran are the patrons of both Hamas and Hezbollah. I fully agree that you cannot ignore either Hamas or Hezbollah. Those are major social movements, regardless of whether they are our cup of tea or not. That's not the question. I think myself that the Palestinians deserve better. The Palestinians deserve better than Hamas and better than Mahmoud Abbas. That's not the question. But the reality on the ground, Hamas now has basically a legitimate mandate from the Palestinian people, and Hezbollah has emerged as the most important political player in Lebanon. The question is, will engagement with Hamas and Hezbollah lead to political reconciliation? Absolutely. I think the administration is trying to find ways and means
trying to really go around the question. Because remember, Mark, Hamas and Hezbollah are basically labeled, well, they're not labeled, they are basically considered terrorist movement by the Bush administration. And it's a big deal once you basically consider a movement a terrorist organization. It becomes an uphill battle to basically remove that particular entity. As I understand, they are indirect. I mean, remember now, the British government is talking to Hezbollah in Lebanon. I don't believe, Mark, that the British authorities would basically have feelers and meet with Hezbollah leaders without some acknowledgement from the Obama administration. Some also Americans are also have been engaged with Hamas, as I understand. I think it's the beginning of a very difficult process that the administration is trying to find its voice, trying to find ways and means to find a formula to involve those two important political and social movements in the area.
And Ali Zagheb, we had many conversations before the elections that we must remind our listeners in America here that Hamas won.
Absolutely, Hamas won fair and square. Nobody can deny it. And I think President Obama understands that. And he did say Hamas does represent a slice of the Palestinian people. But Hamas also has some obligations. He did not call Hamas a terrorist organization like the previous administration. He just said Hamas has some obligations. By the same token, Israel has some obligations and the Palestinian Authority has obligations. He went even further to say that the Arab countries have some obligations towards normalizing relations and establishing or helping and establish a secure Israel and an independent Palestinian state. So it is not just one group. The whole Middle East is responsible for this. But let me go back to one idea that I think Fawaz mentioned, that the American president has limited political capital. I really totally disagree with that statement. I remember the late Monahan. He was called by President Nixon, and he was not a friend of Nixon, to become the ambassador in India. And someone asked him, why would you listen to Nixon? He said, when the president of the United States calls, you answer. Okay, and I do believe the governor from Utah also, who was just appointed the ambassador to China, the same thing. The American president has more capital than any other leader in the whole wide world.
But, you know, I mean, let me just finish.
Once he stands up and faces the American people and explains to them that this is in the interest of the American people and the world, I do believe that he carries more capital than any leader in the whole wide world.
Fawaz?
Mark, may I say a few words about this?
Sure, then we'll turn to William Kern.
What Ali says, and I this is really a widespread perception and conviction in the Arab and Muslim world. And I really, deep in my heart, I hear you, Ali. But there is a particular understanding that the president could push a button in Washington, D.C., and everything will move. It's a magical thing. Well, the reality is there is a political process in the United States. There are checks and balances in the United States. We think that the question of the Palestinian-Israeli conflict is part of the domestic political system. The reason why Ali, the president, has been able to talk about settlements in the way that he has, because also the American Congress has some concerns about settlements. He has not been able to talk about anything else. And remember what he said about settlement. He said, future settlement. He didn't say anything about the established settlement. And this is a major distinction. The administration is calling upon Israeli leaders not to build new settlements as opposed to dismantling already existing settlements. So, and once the president, if the president decides, and I agree with you, if the president decides, but making a decision to move forward on the Palestinian-Israeli conflict requires tremendous investment, Ali.
I totally agree with you, Fawaz.
A political capital that's limited. The president, remember, every president has an agenda. Every president, it doesn't matter. And the agenda now says we have to put the American economic house in order. The American agenda says Pakistan and Afghanistan have emerged as the two most pivotal issues for the United States, Iran, and then the Arab-Israeli conflict. Where do you start? Where do you spend your currency? Where will you invest your political capital? Those are the critical questions that I am talking about.
And William Kern, you're still with us?
Yes, I am. I Mark, this whole affair rests on two things, in my estimation. Iran and Israel. If Obama can get Israel to play ball, and I don't think that's a foregone conclusion. A lot of people say there's a lot of leverage over Israel, and they have to abide by our wishes and so on and so forth. That is not guaranteed. If he can get Israel to play ball and Iran, if Iran can be brought into this game, they are a key to Lebanon. They are a key to Gaza. They are a key to Afghanistan. It would be a watershed event in world history if Obama could seduce the Iranians into a more friendly relationship. But Israel and Iran, those are the two pressure points. Those are the two. If those two players would cooperate, and it's a big if. As the previous guest said, it is going to take a tremendous amount of investment in terms of diplomacy and military power and political influence at home, political capital at home. Those are the key issues in my mind. And, you know, guessing about what's going to happen in the Middle East is very, very ambitious for anyone. So I say that with that in mind.
And I'd be curious tomorrow morning to see what happens in the press in Pakistan, the press in other parts of the Muslim world, Ali.
You know, but again, and I'm not trying to negate anything that anybody said. I think we're all basically on the same page. But this is the first step that the President of the United States is taking. It is a beautiful step that is being applauded by almost everybody in the Middle East, Arabs, Muslims, everywhere. And I do believe this step will move forward. Although he was not specific on some issues, he was very specific on others in reference to the Palestinian-Israeli conflict. He was very specific about what needs to be done, establishing a Palestinian state. And now the hard work comes. And even the U.S. Congress, the U.S. Senate, most of them would like to see a secure Israel and an independent Palestinian state. So I do believe there is enough capital to move this process forward.
Well, I'll be very curious to see where this goes. There's so much more he said in his speech when he raised issues of women, when he raised issues of democracy. And I couldn't help but thinking, as he was talking about democracy in the Middle East, every time this happens, I have to think about the election in among the Palestinians, what Hamas won.
But Mark, he did actually explain the complexity of democracy and how it's not just about a matter of elections. I can't remember his exact words.
Yes.
He did kind of go into how democracy is more than just an election. And he addressed Hamas head on. He addressed that whole issue head on. And he didn't shy away from anything people thought he might shy away from. It was really a very bold speech. And for a 50-minute speech, there was a lot in there.
One of the things that struck me, and we only have about a minute and a half left here, was and we'll do this on another day soon, is the debate going on in the Israeli press at the moment, where people like Tzipi Levini, the head of the Kadima party, who almost became the head of Israel, and Ehud Barak, who was in the cabinet but he was head of the Labor Party, came out very, really positively about the speech and attacked, at least Tzipi and the others attacked Netanyahu. And then the others said some pretty amazing things about Jewish truth instead of Arab lies. And there's a huge split going on. I think this is going to cause as much and maybe even more intense discussion inside Israel as it does anywhere else in the Middle East. And on that note, I think we might have to wrap this up because we're just about out of time. And I want to thank Dr. Fawaz Jerjes for joining us once again. I look forward to having you back on very soon. It's a pleasure to hear your voice in the air with us again. Fawaz, you still there? Thank you so much. And Dr. Ali Zagheb here in the studio and William Kern.
Thank you for having us.
Thank you all for being. It's been great. And we're going to take a very short break and come back. I want to remind you that Urbanite Radio Stories on the Mark Steiner Show are made possible by Baltimore Mediation, the first mediation firm in the state of Maryland, specializing in separation and divorce and business and workplace conflicts. It's located in Baltimore. Go to www.baltimoremediation.com. And when we come back, we'll explore violence going on in Baltimore City, why it's risen so much in black and white communities in this town. Stay with us. We'll be right back.